At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
So why do you want to learn a new language? I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/StarTalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/StarTalk today.
I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
And this is Playing with Science. Today we glide with effortless grace, whilst dazzling you with a double, or maybe even a triple. We will most certainly salco, and most definitely do it all whilst on the edge.
I think it's salchow, isn't it?
No, salco.
Salco? Oh, really?
Yep.
Well, no, okay.
Welcome to the English language.
Thank you. Yeah, that ain't English, believe me.
Close enough.
And for those of you who don't quite get figure skating as an Olympic sport, get out of here. You know you love it. You watch it all the time. It's got the highest ratings. Gymnastics went on a date with ballet and ended up in the ice rink, and you know you love it.
To make sure we nail this, once again, we have our good friend, Professor Eric Goff, who is going to break down the science. And with us throughout the show, along with the good professor, we have figure skating analyst Jackie Wong, who will no doubt be marking both Chuck and I on our performance. And there is absolutely no hope of either you and I meddling.
Oh, that is for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And to give us an unrivaled performance POV, we have 3-time world championship medalist, former Team USA figure skater, Sasha Cohen.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome.
That is going to be incredible. Right. Welcome to the good professor. We will have you on board for quite a large part of this show. And in the studio with us, Jackie Wong.
Look, happy to be here.
Yeah. The name of your podcast, once again, so as everybody knows up front, please.
Ice Talk.
Ice Talk.
Ice Network.
Ice Talk. Cool.
Yes, it's a little
Star
bit similar.
Talk meets Ice Talk.
Exactly.
Very cool. Very cool. And so I would assume that you have a very rabid fan base, because what I know about people who like figure skating is that they are some of the most passionate fans that you will ever encounter in your life.
I mean, it's totally true, but it's also true that Patriots fans are a little bit...
If I had to pinpoint the one standout feature of a figure skater, where would you go? Would it be they've got to be unbelievably graceful, strong, or is there one component for you that screams top class?
It's not something that you really see physically, but it's core strength. Everything is about core strength with figure skating. When you're jumping in the air and you're landing jumps at, you know, whatever, 8 to 10 times your body weight and in pressure, like, you really have to be stable, and you really have to figure out how you don't collapse when you land those jumps. And it's the same thing with the spins. You can't spin at the rate of revolution that we do without being actually very strong there.
Eric, this is perfect timing for you. What sort of forces, male or female figure skater, once they start to perform, what sort of forces are they exposed to in terms of takeoff, spinning, landing, etc.?
Well, they're certainly having to get off the ice with a couple times their weight. if they're going to execute some spins. Keep in mind the great athletes in the NBA who go up and we get dazzled by a 360 spin dunk. These ice skaters are going up spinning 2, 3, and even 4 times, and they're landing on a little blade on some slippery ice. They're not, you know, landing on a nice hard court floor. So the athleticism is incredible, and I definitely agree with Jackie. You're talking about a lot of core strength involved in executing these techniques.
So I think, Chuck, what we've just learned is under no circumstances from now on do we applaud LeBron James.
That's it. LeBron James. Seriously, try that with some skates on, buddy.
Yeah.
See what happens. All right. There you go.
We just might applaud. Okay, Jackie, what else? I mean, I look at figure skaters and I think, they must be fearless. I don't want to walk on the ice, right? This is just me, my inner coward has spoken, let alone start to skate, build up speed, and then perform a whole routine of twists, triples, and doubles, and then even begin to think about landing without falling on my backside.
Yeah, fearlessness is certainly a characteristic. I mean, it's not, you don't get the kind of downhill skiing kind of fearlessness, right? It's a different kind of exposure to danger that you have with figure skating, because you've got sharp things on your feet. Mm-hmm. You've got a surface that you're landing on that is completely, harsh, right? It's the hardest thing that you can land on in terms of sports, the ice.
Right.
And, you know, any kind of slip of an edge or just any kind of accident, you've got problems. So
with that in mind, two things. One, so in gymnastics, you practice with a harness, because when you're flipping, if you miss your flip, you don't want to hit and it's a mat that you're falling on, a nice little pad, but they still put a harness on you. I would imagine you can't do that when you are learning these maneuvers in ice skating, or do you?
So there are harnesses that you train on, and especially when you are training a new jump, especially when you're going one revolution up, right? Like if you're used to doing double jumps and it's the first time you've ever done a triple jump, you're usually on a harness.
And how does that work? Are you on a trampoline? Are you still on the ice?
The ice.
Oh, wow.
So, What happens is there are two types of harnesses that are generally used. One is a harness that is kind of connected to a wire that's like on the ceiling,
like on a track.
Yeah, on a track, and the coach will basically be the other side of the lever, right? Or the pulley, right?
Relationship with your coach.
Yeah.
You don't want to piss off
that
coach.
You have to have a great relationship with your coach for that.
Tell me about it.
And you're literally in this thing, and the idea is that you're not supposed, the coach isn't pulling you up so much as they are
spotting you.
Yeah. So if something goes wrong, the coach kind of keeps you from, you know, hitting your head on the ice.
Everything is ice related then. You don't just start to take all of this performance routine, rehearse it in a nice, comfortable environment. Every time you perform in competition, you have been performing on ice and training on ice all of the time. So it's reinforcing that.
Yeah,
how much time do you spend on the ice? Because Gary said everything is on the ice. So let's say I just want to know. I want to do a double. I want to learn a double toe loop. Yeah. How much time would I have to be on the ice? And first, before you answer that, walk us through what a double toe loop is, and then how much time would I have to spend on the ice to learn how to do that?
So without getting too technical, a double toe loop is a jump where you pick off your free leg, so not your landing leg. So if you rotate counterclockwise, which most skaters do, you land on your right foot. So you for those skaters, you pick off of your left toe pick, and you go up in the air and you spin.
So pick
two
is
times.
The serrated edge. Right.
That is correct. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
And when you say pick off, it's when you see them, they're skating backwards, and then you see them pull that leg up, and it looks like they're almost hacking the ice with the front of the skate.
Yeah.
And that's a pick off. That means pick off.
Pick off, pick in. It depends on who you talk to, but
okay. There you go.
Yeah. So it's you take off from hitting the toe pick on the ice and generating that force to go up in the air, And there's certain kinds of other physics of like your legs swinging and your body being in the right.
Oh, we'll get to those. Yeah. Don't worry about that. The good professor is waiting, ready to go on that one.
I will not be talking too much about physics. But the then after you pick off that toe pick, you rotate twice around and then you land on the right foot, your landing foot.
Wow.
The axis of rotation is head through to.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
That's pretty wild.
So
how long would it take to, how much time would I spend on the ice to do something like that?
It's
in hours.
It's very, it's very dependent. I mean, I would not say I was the most talented figure skater in the world, but it took me probably a year of training to get to a double jump.
Oh my God.
You may have missed your chance.
Now that we're there, how much weight would I have to lose in order to pull this off? No, I'm joking. My God, a year!
Yeah,
that's insane.
You have to get all the basics first. You have to figure out how to actually move on the ice. You have to actually figure out how to jump on the ice, right. and those
things.
You
take guys a consider that like a basic move, right?
It is.
Yeah, that's like a basic move. A year of your life to learn one basic move.
Day one stuff.
Oh man!
I mean, you'll see some of the more talented figure skaters will, you know, they'll be 4 years old and you know, within a couple of months they'll get a double jump.
Right.
Yeah. You're crushing him. Absolutely crushing him with the you'll see 4 year olds. So let's get to the professor.
Let me just say
professor,
now. I'm hanging up my sequin tights.
Yeah, well not just yet.
Rhinestones.
Any more show to go.
Rhinestones.
Well, let me pick up a couple points real quick.
Please do. Please do. Double toe loop and then and pick up from there and wherever you want.
So, you know, Jackie had mentioned the training methods. I've seen some of the British divers, when they train, they can go into a nice padded gymnastics facility and they actually have a diving board in there and they can practice leaping from the board. So as long as you're over, liquid water and you're main experience in the Olympics is what you're doing above the water, then you can do that in a nice, warm, cozy facility. But of course, with ice, there is no way to simulate that. You just have to get out on the ice and do your training out there. So as far as taking a year to do the training too, I mean, I think, Gary, you could probably tell Chuck how long it takes to hit a nice 30-yard cross into the box, 30 yards, you know, with a nice bend on it with a soccer ball. I mean, you know, those types of things take a long, long time to perfect.
It's how much time you have.
I got 10 minutes.
Okay. There's got to be an equation, Professor, and I am not the one to push that forward, apart from suggest that there is. The amount of natural ability you have, and we are still talking about figure skating here, plus the amount of time you have, plus the dedication and the amount therein, the coefficient of dedication. Mm-hmm. Well, I've just invented something. Well done, me.
I like it.
Yes, thank you. And you add all of that together, and then you get an idea of how much time it takes. Because some guys, as you say, this four-year-old who's just absolutely natural, or this other person who gets there because they work their way through it and they dedicate and they have this other thing going on.
There's a revolution of off-life ice training that has changed quite a bit over the last, you know, couple of decades, where you do a lot more off-ice training and it's not literally just, you know, you just do jumps on the ice. There are kind of these machines that you'll see, like if you Google Mirai Nagasu, for example, she's got a video that somebody did of her where you see her training the triple axel off ice, and it's literally her on this kind of lazy Susan kind of thing, where you get the harness to rotate in such a way that when she jumps, she's literally just pulling in and doing the rotations. So there are different methods of training now that have made things like all these quads that the guys are doing, the triple axles that the women are starting to attempt more now, that makes those things much more possible.
A quad being?
Four times around.
Four times, yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa. So, okay, Professor, Chuck wants to do a double toe loop.
Okay.
Let's go through some of the physics involved in that, and then we'll go for the big stuff. We'll go from double toe loop to a quad, and then break down the physics and the forces and everything else that takes place within executing that kind of, what do we call it, routine?
Program.
Program.
Program, yeah.
Thank you.
So Jackie's exactly right about the, you know, the new training techniques. It's a lot of things you can do off the ice. But of course, if you're going to train to do the actual jump, you really have to perfect how you get off the ice. And you absolutely want to be able to do it right after you're off the ice, so that the core strength, the training on how to pull the arms in, the rotation feel, learning to prevent a little bit of dizziness with focusing on certain points. I mean, all those things can be done off the ice, but unlike a diver, you really have to perfect that launch off the ice.
So talk about the actual physics there,
sure.
Eric. When you talk about launching off the ice, what are the physics involved there? When you talk about pulling your arms in and rotation, why and what are the physics there?
So the rotation part is just a classic angular momentum conservation example. As long as we don't have any torques acting, and you get a little bit of frictional torque from the ice, but you'll notice when a skater goes into the final, you know, massive fast spin, what the skater will do is have the arms completely out, perhaps even one leg out, trying to get his or her mass as far from that axis of rotation as possible. And then right whenever the turn is initiated, bringing everything in as tightly as possible so that the mass is confined to the axis of rotation as close as possible, and that causes the skater to spin even faster. And you can try this at home. If you have a nice swivel chair, or if you're at work and maybe your heart's game isn't working on your computer and you need to kill time another way, you got your swivel chair, you get a couple of books in your hand and you hold them outstretched and you get a good spin going on your chair, then pull them in real tight. And with your feet off the ground, of course, and you're going to notice you're going to speed up when you pull those arms in. It's a fantastic feeling if you've never experienced it. If you're over 40, watch out for dizziness. You don't want to fall out of your chair, but it's a fun feeling.
Well, thank God I'm a few days from 40.
You are in a child.
I'm about to do this right now, and
that's what a scientist is. It's a child asking questions.
Well, I got the child part down pat.
You're the biggest kids in the world.
Here we go. All right, so here we go, man. I'm gonna take my arms. I'm gonna give a spin. I'm going to take my arms. I'm going to give a spin, and then we're going to see what happens.
Jackie, you got to mark this.
All right, and Jackie, I want you to judge how good this is. Okay, here we go, and...
There, you sped up. Can you
see? I did.
Yeah.
I did. It actually works.
Now, let me tell you how you
have to
jump.
Wait, let's do it again. Let's do it. No, I'm joking.
Let's not. Do it during the break. Sorry, Professor.
Go ahead.
Well, let me tell you how you're going to have to jump. So if you're going to get in the air and you're going to do, say, a quad, now... You know, the men are the ones that can do this first because they've got the stronger legs. So if you're going to do a quad, if you're going to spin four times in the air, you're going to need to jump really high. You're going to need to get 3 to 4 feet off the ice, your center mass elevated by that much, which means jumping between 10 and 11 miles an hour off the ice.
Wow.
You need to be in the air between 5/6 and a full second. So Your launch speeds here have to be, you know, in that 10 mile an hour range. And to spin four times, you know, you're talking 4 hertz or 4, you know, rotations per second. This is getting, you know, maybe about half the rotation rate of a football that's thrown, a nice tight spiral. So you're going to have to be able to elevate, you know, get a hang time comparable to what an NBA player can do if you're going to execute four of those spins.
Wow.
See, the thing is, in gymnastics, on the floor routine, the floor itself is sprung.
Right.
I mean, I'm no expert, but I'm guessing you can't get a sprung
ice. You're not getting any spring off of ice.
No. So how much more effort, Professor, does it take to push down into the ice to get that up, or is it all done through the speed of the skater?
Well, notice right before they go into these big spins, they get a little bit of speed going before they execute the spin, and then there's kind of a pound off the ice to really get that impulse off the ice vertically upward. So when they get launched off that ice, you know, at 10 miles an hour, they have to get those rotations in before they come back down. They got to keep their arms in tight. And that's another thing. If they keep their arms in tight, they keep their legs in tight, that's going to enhance their spin rate. If their arms are out too far, they're going to spin slower, as Chuck just showed us in the chair.
And Jackie, do they get judged on that?
They get judged on air position.
On air position.
Yeah. If the axis of rotation is completely off, mm-hmm. that is something that you would you may get a
deduction
execution grade less on. So you, that's how they judge the elements.
Imagine, I'd be thrilled to bits with just one rotation.
Right.
You've done a quad, but you haven't quite got it in the position that the judges want, and they mark you down.
Yeah.
That must be really hard
work. Has there ever been a skater who just got poor marks and stood up and go, really? Let me see you do that. Huh? You're so damn hot with your judging. Well, let me see you do it. Hey, the ice is right there, buddy. The ice is right there.
John McEnroe. Could you imagine?
The McEnroe of skaters.
Hot mics.
The McEnroe of skaters.
Hot mics backstage, right? That's what we need.
Sure.
Hot mics backstage.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
With that thought, we're going to take a break. John McEnroe on ice. Yeah, we're going to probably need to lie down and consider that fully. Right. We're going to come back. The good professor, Eric Goff, and of course, Jackie Wong, the freakish skating expert and analyst, will be with us for our second part. Don't go away. Plenty more to come.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Welcome back. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Dice.
And this, of course, is Playing with Science. And today we're unraveling the physics involved in the elegance of figure skating, which is also known as ballet on ice. And having seen Chuck execute the most immaculate turn, you can see why.
I am a picture of grace and poise.
Isn't he just? Yes. Uh-huh. And with us in the studio, we have figure skating analyst Jackie Wong, host of the podcast Ice Talk.
Yeah.
Yes, Ice Talk. So remember that one. And via Skype, we have the good professor Eric Goff, the author of Gold Medal Physics. You'll remember it was a stocking stuffer back end of last year. And
still is.
It still is. And the book for all sports fans who love their science.
Yeah. This is a really fascinating topic because the figure skating is the most watched event of the Winter Olympics. There's nothing that gets higher ratings, so clearly it is extremely popular. What do you think makes for this popularity, Jackie?
I think partially it's the dramatics of it all. It's all the kind of histrionics of figure skating, of having music, having programs, and then the fact that when you're a figure skater, you're really expected to be sort of a sign of perfection. So, you know, one little slip up and it's like, oh no, you got something wrong. And you forget how really incredibly difficult this stuff is to do. And you know, I think the intrigue of it is that you see these skaters doing these, you know, you would think physically impossible feats, but they do them in such a way that it just seems like they're just, you know, skating around casually.
How many people like Chuck and I are sitting there thinking, I'm tuned in because I want to see you fall over? And how many people are tuned in because they want to see you execute the most immaculate program?
I think it depends on those rabid fans you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. I think, you know, it's like NASCAR. There are some people who definitely watch for the crashes.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's all there is to it. There's got to be that.
I mean, there are YouTube videos online that are all about figure skating falls. So, yeah.
So, speaking of crashes, I saw a video, and I just want to ask you if it's real. This is an aside, where there was a ice dancing doubles, and one of them got cut with a skate.
It happens a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
just Blades of Glory. They're just watching the film. That's digging. That's on YouTube.
That's decapitation there.
That's a different kind of cutting. But yeah, no, I mean, figure skating accidents happen all the time, especially when you're an ice dancer in pair skating where the two people are so close to each other.
Yeah.
And
then the degree, can I say this? Yes, I can. Degree of difficulty of the program has to have some sort of dynamic movement. And obviously, if you're going upside down, that means the skates are coming closer to your face.
Yeah, totally. And you even see that in practice because there are, you know, when you're actually training, you're training with 5 to 10 to 15 skaters and, you know, one little slip up and you crash into somebody else and you're done.
All right, but now we're on the subject of the skates themselves. Please explain, and then we'll get the professor to break down the physics behind the skate itself, because it's not a single blade, is it?
It's two edges on a blade. So if you turn the blade upside down, you literally see two kind of knives, and then there's this kind of U-shaped.
So it's two like razors with a trough in the middle.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. And that's called the rocker.
That's called the rocker, that little trough in the middle?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. And is that so that you can turn either left or right and get a blade on the ice either way? Or does that speed you up? What's the purpose of that?
Well, it's to allow you to have an inside edge and an outside edge without it literally just being one blade that goes on the ice. And it's about a 3/16 of an inch thick. So it's pretty hefty, but it's not that hefty.
Yeah.
So, Professor, with the double-edged blade, what are we working with in terms of the physics with an inside and an outside edge?
And can I shave with it?
Yes.
Yeah.
You probably could.
Well, I don't know about shaving, but you certainly get a little bit of enhanced stability when you have two options instead of one for your blade placement. So as Jackie was saying, you have, you know, certain moves are going to require an inside edge. Certain moves are going to require an outside edge. So you have a little wider flexibility than you would with a single blade. So the pressure melting was a popular theory for how you might actually get the ice to be slippery, but that's been somewhat debunked. So you could actually get those thin blades to start slightly warm the ice and reduce the friction coefficient and actually help you go a little bit faster. Mm. I think the ideal ice temperature is around -5.5 or so degrees Celsius, which is, 22 or so degrees Fahrenheit. And so you're not going to be able to warm it quite up to pure melting, although the surface is a little different from the bulk. So you can get a little bit of melting right at the very, very surface layer. And that thin blade, whenever you're on just one or the other, can actually enhance that melting process. So you could actually get a little bit more lubrication and a little bit more speed.
So Jackie, wait, speak to that for 1 second. From a skater standpoint, is it better to have, what's better? Like softer ice, harder ice? What's faster? Do you want faster ice? So what's the perfect ice conditions?
You don't have it soft for landing, are you?
I would like, yeah. Get rubber ice so that when you fall,
come on, please.
For a lot of figure skaters, they love the softer ice because the softer ice allows your edge to really
carve.
into the ice. Right. So the harder the ice there is, the harder your edge, it is going to be for your edge to actually make the curves that you want to make. Ah. And so harder ice actually gets to be a bit more slippery.
So the softer ice allows more control.
Yeah, it's a little bit more control, yeah.
Oh.
So yeah. Professor, is there a sweet spot? Because we always find that in sports, there's this inextricable part of being a sweet spot on the blade. And if there is, whereabouts is it and how does a performer get to utilize it?
So, I mean, just to pick up quickly on Jackie's point, the added slipperiness is going to come when you're trying to push outward, like when you're trying to make a turn. So when the ice is harder and you don't quite get that that melted layer that you want right next to the blade, you can actually, it can enhance a fall. You're not going to grip it, as he was saying. If you're going straight on the ice and you're looking to have a slight reduction in the coefficient of friction associated with the blade and the ice, if you get a little bit of warming and you kind of soften that ice slightly, you can actually lower that coefficient a little bit and help you go faster in a straight line. But definitely when you're trying to head out on a turn and you're trying to get that nice centripetal force inward to help you keep moving in a circular path, you definitely like that softer ice to be able to kind of cut into it and kind of hold you there a little bit better than you would if the ice was a lot harder and you don't have that give in it.
Where is the sweet spot on that blade and what does it do? I mean, either one of you can answer that. Jackie, you skate. So what's the sweet spot about and why would you even want it or need it?
So the sweet spot in kind of like in a lot of other sports, it's the ball of your foot. And that's there's what I was talking about earlier, the rocker, right? The rocker is basically this curve of your blade. Mm-hmm. And there is this part in the blade where literally if you stand on it the right way, your toe pick, which is in the front,
yep,
is elevated. The back of which is the heel, is also elevated. So you're not like the blade is not flat to the ice. The blade has a curvature to it. And so that's where the rocker is where you want to be when you're spinning, because that keeps you in
contact with the ice.
Right, exactly. Right. And the thing about spinning is what you don't see is it's literally just circles that you're making around the ice. It's not that you're like rotating on one point. You're rotating in very, very small circles.
Wait, now speak to that, because I watched this, I think, I don't know when it was. Maybe it was the last Olympics or it might have been World Championships that were on NBC, okay? So the young lady was doing the super fast spin at the end, but the announcer, I remember distinctly saying, uh-oh.
Traveling.
She did a little traveling there, as you can see. And she talked about the circles moving across. And it moved like, I don't know, an inch and a half, 2 inches. I'm like, really, lady?
Are the judges that brutal?
Yeah, I'm like, is that a big, right? Really, that's a big problem. But anyway, what is that? Is that you have to be in one, you got to stay in that place?
If you want to get the best marks on an element, yes, it's about speed, it's about positioning, it's about centering, which is what
centering.
It's not about the Russian judge, then. It's not the way it used to be. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you watched figure skating because you wanted to see
what the Russian
how
judge.
Low your mark was with the Russian judge,
and the Russian judge gives her a -6. I didn't even know that was.
See, all of this has changed, hasn't it? There is now a different system. Yeah. of marking and judging, and it seems an awfully complex procedure, because I just thought I can cope with 6 less with my math. I'm good with that. Now you can get marks up to over 130 and wherever.
And that has a lot to do with figure skating trying to make itself more objective. And so half of the mark now is much more along the lines of like, here are the elements that were done. Here are the base values of the elements that were done. This is how well it was done. That's how you get to a number. Because when you go back to the 90s and before, and you had the 6.0 system, you literally had, the Russian judge giving 5.5.
Everybody knows the Russian judge.
And the Russian judge gives, what is that on the card? Capitalist pig. I didn't even know that was a score. Anyway.
And you wonder what those marks mean. Right. And now at least there is some sort of accountability.
You quantified them. Yeah, exactly. Like there's a, but speaking of, back to the traveling very quickly, Eric, does that come from leaning one way or the other? Or what creates that little bit of traveling when you're in the process of that spin from a physics standpoint?
So when you enter the spin, you're obviously coming at it from a certain direction. And whenever you enter that spin, you are going to have a slight drift unless you can arrest it somehow right on that first turn. It's very difficult to maintain an exact spot on the ice whenever you're doing that spin, because you have to enter the spin with some kind of velocity in some direction. So when you start the spin, you may have a very slight drift involved, unless you can do a lean or some type of a little cut on that first part of it just to hold yourself steady at the beginning. But you got to have a little bit of a circle down there to help give you that, you know, that inward push. But once you get started on that spin, you can make that circle pretty small.
That comes back to your core strength.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. So to classic example, yes, core strength. Everybody breathe in.
Holding my breath for the rest of the show now.
Right. Core strength. Before we get to a break, Jackie, how much more can we see from the performers in terms of, so we've got to a quad now,
yep,
which was, I don't know, 20, 30 years unthinkable. Can we go further?
I think so. I think so. I don't know when that's going to be. You know, you've got coaches thinking that there's, you know, right now the quad lutz is the hardest jump.
All right.
And there's one other quad, which is the quad axel, which adds a half rotation. So it's 4.5 rotations. That's why the axel is more more difficult than the rest of it, because it's an extra half rotation, because you're taking off forwards and landing backwards.
Ah.
So there are coaches out there who think that a quad axel will be landed sometime in the next couple of years or so. There are skaters who are actually play trying them. You know, they're not actually training them seriously, but that's possible. You know, whether or not a quintuple jump is going to be around in the next 10 years, we'll see. A lot of it depends on how much people are willing to push themselves, how training methods change.
All right, Professor. How long, how much air time, hang time, call it what you may, will a quintuplet?
A quintuple?
Quintuple take. I mean, it's probably going to take longer than it takes me to say it or not. I don't know.
So remember, if you can jump in the air and stay in the air for 1 second, you're going to have to elevate your center mass about 4 feet. Now, that is better than even some NBA players can do. You have to jump 11 miles an hour off the ice, and you need to stay in the air for a full second. And you're really, the laws of physics are constraining what can happen here. So you have to get 4 feet in the air, and you're looking at, you know, 5 rotations during that second. That is just about the limit of what a human can do right now.
Can we up the speed? And would that have any benefit, or just that's me in the front row of the audience?
Up, what do you mean up the speed?
On the ice.
In other words, if you go faster and get into the jump and the rotation faster, will that allow you to get to the fifth rotation?
Well, it's kind of like this, trade-off you have when you do a long jump. I mean, you want to get a lot of speed whenever you're taking off for the jump, but you also need a good bounce in the air to go high, because you need to stay in the air a long time. It's the same thing with the skate. You can go fast into the spin, but you're going to sacrifice a little bit if you're going too fast, because you have to have that hard jump off the ice that gives you that vertical force upward so that you can have that nice vertical velocity into the air. Hmm. You have to stay in the air at least a second, turning 4 times, and you're going to be 4 feet jumping into the air. I mean, this is going to take incredible athleticism, core strength, just as strong as you could make it. And you're going to have, for 5 rotations, I think we're a way off for that one.
Okay. Right. I'll show you, Doc. I'll show you.
Yeah. So, right. While
you'll all see.
You got to get out of the chair, Chuck. You can't stay in the chair.
We are going to take a break. And when we come back, Chuck will have had 6 rotations. That is guaranteed. Right. Staying with us, the good professor, and of course, Jackie Wong. But to join us will be former US champion and Olympic medalist Sasha Cohen. Absolutely. Playing with Science is still here, and we're back with those wonderful people after this break.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Welcome back. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm still Chuck Nice.
And this is Still Playing with Science. We're here in the studio with figure skating analyst Jackie Wong, who has been fabulous with us and his host of podcast called Ice Talk. Please go and check that out. And joining us via Skype, we are thrilled. We are thrilled, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Absolutely thrilled to have Sasha Cohen, 2006 Silver Olympic medalist, three-time World Championship medalist. The list goes on and on and on. And Chuck.
Yeah?
I do believe this lady was involved in the Blades of Glory movie.
Oh!
Just to make you even more jealous.
Yes, exactly. Because you know, that's like, that would have been my dream to be in Blades of Glory. Anything where I can wear tights and skates.
Mm-hmm. So welcome to the show. You may want to leave now.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
It's a pleasure for us to have you here. So, okay. You started off as a gymnast in an early age and then graduated into figure skating. The gymnastics background, that must have been such a help for you.
It was. I actually was a bit of a terror. I destroyed the house. So my parents were trying to figure out a way to use up my boundless energy. And that took the form in 3 hours of gymnastics a day, which ended up giving me a chance to develop my coordination and strength. And then by the time I started skating, I kind of already had some natural athletic ability, but ice is still slippery. It's a different.
It certainly is. Yeah.
It is.
Hey, you know, I think Eric, you have a question for Sasha. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I've actually got a couple, but let me start with this one. When we do a little karate or martial arts, we're taught when we're doing spins to try to have a focal point. And I'm just wondering, when you're spinning on the ice so much, do you do any kind of training to get you to the point where you can spin like that in an effective way without getting dizzy? Or do you have a focal point that you're checking out when you're in a spin? Or is there a certain technique to help you with that?
So the secret is, which is very different than dance, which you spot your head with every turn in order to not get dizzy. With figure skating, you have to stay centered. If you stay within 1 foot, your pattern's tracing over and over, you will miraculously be able to come out and not be dizzy. But if you start traveling, which is, points off and not the ideal way to go in a competitive figure skating spin, you'll get very dizzy. And I think it's something to do with the inner ear and losing your kind of vertical alignment within space. And that's when you completely lose it and would come out and see stars and be very dizzy. But if you stay in one spot, you can come out and be fine as if nothing ever happened.
Wow.
So you really need to keep the vertical drift to a minimum whenever you're doing that, I guess.
Within inches is, you know, as soon as you start to travel 2 feet or 3 feet, you come out of it and you're very disoriented.
Yeah, so the horizontal drift is minimized, your vertical drift is minimized, so your head's pretty much staying in the same spot, it's just spinning, I guess. Well, let me ask you this question about stretching, because you're famous for, you know, doing these splits on the ice, these vertical splits where, you know, one leg's way up in the air and you can do spins and like that. Do skaters engage in any kind of sophisticated stretching routines whenever they're training? I mean, do you use equipment for this, or is it just kind of a standard get on the mat and make sure you can do a split?
So I was fortunate to start with a core of gymnastics, but then stretching is a daily habit. It's a commitment and it's a discipline. So at night I would take a bath, and then if I wanted to watch TV, I would be sitting in the splits. And the discipline of stretching, of repeating daily, is how you cultivate that kind of flexibility. And then you work on the strength component to be able to hold those kind of flexible positions in a spiral when you're out on the ice and don't have the floor to support you. So I would say I would maybe sometimes use a TheraBand to stretch out my hamstrings.
Okay.
Or IT band. But generally, I think I'm flexible enough that I can kind of just grab onto my calf and pull it close to my face if I'm on my back. But I think if you're a beginner, prof,
yeah. You are such a show off, Sasha.
No, I've just spent way too long stretching. I mean, imagine everything else I could have done with my life if I wasn't sitting in the splits for half of it.
Absolutely. Way to touch my toes if I bend my knees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look so, where you are now.
Hey, listen.
We've got to say goodbye to the good professor because he is a man in demand. He has a lecture to attend and there are eager students awaiting him. So, Professor, thank you so much for your time. And we look forward
to
your company
on.
Soon.
Yeah, well,
pleasure's ours, as always.
We'll see you soon, right. Eric. Take care.
Right,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
So we have Sasha here, Jackie. What was her trademark? What was her unique point in her performance that everyone just went, oh, wow. Or people would cram through the doors to see every time she performed.
Well, it was a good segue because her trademark really was her flexibility.
Yeah.
And probably still is her flexibility when she's on the ice. And so much of Sasha Cohen's appeal was the way that she presented herself in, you know, in the music, in the choreography. And then the jumps really were in a lot of ways secondary for her performances. Like they were just seamlessly kind of integrated within her program, and that's why people loved her so much.
And Sasha, we're not talking about you like you're not here. We don't want you to have to toot your own horn. But you know, you are a fan favorite. It seems as though you're known and people love your performances, your routines, your programs. Does that give you a bit of an advantage during a competition, knowing that you're so beloved by the audiences that are watching?
I think that's very personal for every athlete. I think ultimately on a personal level of approval and connection to an audience, it's a wonderful feeling to have cultivated a relationship with the audience over your decade competing in the sport. And, you know, some people thrive in that position. Some people thrive as the underdog and when no one knows them. But I know that, you know, when I came back in 2010 for the national championships, just knowing that I had been here and been competing at this event for probably the last 15 years, it becomes home to you. And the people have seen you grow up and seen you skate since you were 12 years old. And that's a wonderful connection to have when you've grown up with your audience. So it's something that I very much cherished.
Just to endorse what Chuck was saying, you have been inducted into the Hall of Fame, which was 2016, I believe. So congratulations to that. A lot of people would look at your performances and say they were effortless. How did you, and how much effort did you put in to achieving effortless on the ice?
And does that ever hurt you? Because, you know, when you make something look super easy, when you make it look like you're not put, like you're, it's a day in a walk in the park, couldn't that kind of, I don't know, change the psychology of the way the judges are looking at you? Kind of like, she's not really, you know, she's not really putting that much into it. Because honestly, that's how easy you make it look.
Well, I appreciate that, but I think this is something that applies to the whole sport of figure skating. It's our job to make it look easy. We're not supposed to be breathing heavy and struggling and grimacing. Like, this isn't football. And so we have to make it look easy. And when I go back and watch videos, I'm like, oh, wow, like it just seems so effortless. And now when I go back and I, you know, try to skate for a few minutes, I'm bent over, doubled over, and like barely breathing. Everything is sore. My calves are cramping up. But I think skating is like an art as well as a sport, like ballet. And so the beauty is kind of this exterior shell for the deep athleticism that we cultivate underneath that. And it's part of the figure skater's job to make it look easy. You know, I think there's not many people that get to a really high level that make you think, wow, like
so
they're
just
really, really struggling.
If you can, at the heights of your performances, what kind of routine, daily routine, would you go through from start of your day to, you know, getting out of bed to going back to bed? What would your day encompass to make you a top elite athlete?
So my day would start, you know, I get up around 6:30. I would make some coffee and then tea, and then I'd get right on a Pilates mat. I had a Pilates mat in my kitchen, and I'd spend about 30 minutes on a foam roller, stretching, doing 10 minutes of core work and ab work and some stretching just to kind of get the body warm, because when you wake up in the morning, everything is incredibly painful and stiff, you know, from 5 hours of training the day before and the last 15 years. And that builds up. And then I would go to the rink and then I would warm up again with a 20-minute run. And you just really want to be so supple, so warm. You're running, you're sweating. And then you start to cultivate coordination and quickness and that quick twitch muscle fiber with doing jumps off the ice and really quick drills, see how fast you can move your feet. And then it would be the start of the skating day, which would again start with 30 minutes of edge work and really feeling your feet and your blade, like exactly where it was on the ice and your shoulders and hips over your feet. And then maybe an hour later you would start jumping and spinning and working on the choreography, because the body is really a finely tuned machine and it doesn't just turn on. It takes, you know, takes a couple hours to really kind of cultivate to where you're able to do, a peak performance. And I think that's part of the reason why we've kind of trained ourselves to compete at night, which is, you know, for viewership when all the events are, your body is the most awake.
Right.
You've kind of worked through all the morning stiffness, and that's when you're kind of in peak capacity.
That's funny. That's like singers.
Yeah.
Singers sing at night because, you know, you need the day to warm your voice up and your vocal cords to that point. That's really wild.
Yeah, your voice sounds like in the morning.
Yeah.
I have half a voice in the morning. It takes some time.
That's
the
right.
Body's completely the same.
I have a love song I'd like to sing. Yeah, okay.
Oh, dear. No more Barry White, please. You're barred from Barry White.
Wait a minute.
In the big competitions, just before we get to Jackie, in the big competitions, were they always at night, or did you find yourself having to perform your programs during the afternoon and therefore you're out of sync with the whole buildup that you've had?
Well, there's certainly an element of being out of sync just from jet lag and time zone difference. So you try to get there in advance and switch as fast as you can. But usually always the final rounds will always be at night. What can really mess you up, though, is the qualifying rounds, like at a world championship.
Yeah.
And you might have to do your full long program at 8 in the morning. And that's very difficult for the body. So you would get yourself up at 4 a.m. and really try to work into it, warm everything up, go to your practice, because the body, again, just takes so much time to get amped and ready to peak.
Wow. So, Jackie, you had a question.
I did. Well, first of all, the thing about the Olympics this year is actually that the skaters are going to be mostly competing in the morning. So that's going to be an interesting one. And it's a lot based on the fact that, NBC wants primetime coverage, and that's the agreement. So we'll see how that affects the skaters. But Sasha, I wanted to go back to something we talked about here on the air earlier in the show, which was quads. We talk about the men doing a lot of quads. You, I think there's a certain amount of athleticism that we don't credit you with, but at one point in your career, you were training quads, and there's a very skating famous video of you at Skate America 2002, I think, 2003, 2001, one of those, doing and landing a quadruple sow cow. And I wanted to ask you, as a skater who has done quads and trained quads, what that process was like, because I certainly can't attest to training quads.
It's a different paradigm, and I think especially for a woman, you know, our body does not rotate as fast as the men do, and it was such a different paradigm from a triple to a quad. And for me, you know, it was really only a possibility with my sow cow, because on the takeoff, I had an edge that I could just really whip, and as I was going up into the air, I could start to get incredible torque in order to be able to complete four rotations. But what's scary about, you know, a quad is you have to go in with more speed. It's like a bow that you're pulling back. And so you kind of have to pull a little further to get up higher. And everything is not set completely straight and right. And you launch with that much torque and velocity and it's wrong. When you fall, when you go down, it can end really badly.
Wow.
And that's something that, you know, is mitigated to a certain extent in a triple and even more so in a double. You've got time to correct when you're rotating more slowly. And so with a quad, it just, you know, I trained with a harness to kind of get comfortable launching my full athletic torque behind it, because there's a safety element. Again, we take off. I took off backwards from my inside edge of my left foot. And if I was, my shoulders were dropped like 2 millimeters to the right, I could end up putting a lot of torque into it and kind of getting pretty crooked in the air. And then I would go down and just kind of ruin my hip. Wow. So there's that balance that you have to take into account. Everything has to just be that much more precise when you're putting another layer of torque into it.
I was about to ask you, are you cognizant of the physics while you are training and performing? And the answer clearly is yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think at a kinesthetic level, you feel it. You're so in tune with your body as an athlete. It is your medium. It is something that you develop for 20 years in different capacities. So you're just very aware. And then there, you know, there's a level of awareness you develop when you're learning a quad and how different, you know, it takes a very different level of awareness of your body and messaging to your specific, you know, your arms, your legs, of what needs to be done in order to get up, to get around 4 times and to land. And so I think, yes, from that level, from a kinesthetic level, I'm aware of the physics, but from the angles, the torque, the scientific laws, you know, you might have to fill in, you know, do the backfill from there.
We'll get the professor on it.
Exactly.
Sasha, thank you.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
It's so great to talk to you.
To talk to you and for you to share your time with us. I'm sure our listeners are thrilled, just as Chuck and I are. So thank you very much for being one of
Likewise,
our guests.
Likewise, it's a pleasure. Thank you again.
Thank you. And thank you
to Jackie.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool, man.
You're off to South Korea. You will be at the Winter Olympics.
I sure will. It's going to...
You'll be tweeting like a man frenzy.
Tweeting, typing, all kinds of things, yes.
Well, safe travels and have a great trip.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Well, that's our show.
That is
on
it.
Figure skating.
Right.
If you weren't really into figure skating before, hopefully now what we've done is roll back the curtain to allow you a good look at what's going on.
That's
and
right.
Your interest is piqued because Chuck and I, although we don't look great in Leica or sequins, we may just take to the ice and skate. What do you think?
Yeah, we're off right now to go practice our doubles program. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do that.
Male on male ice dancing. It's a thing.
Isn't it?
I just made it that.
Okay. I'm a bit scarred now. Right, that's it from us.
It's Blades of Glory, not Blades of Glory.
Isn't it just? Right, so that's it from Playing with Science. Hope you've enjoyed it. We will be back with a new episode very, very soon.